G'day, Money Miners. Welcome to the show. Today's mining news, 11th of May. And lo and behold, Silver Lake Resources have made the ASX platform. They are no longer distributing by their website and the Money of Mine YouTube channel. There is a new announcement today, a revised deal, but is it actually revised? What is revised? Is it any different? We're going to go into it today, and we're also going to go over the Livent merger with Alchem. Get those lithium hot copper pages going flat out. Welcome to Money and Mine, all listeners, all our great listeners out there, the Money Miners, JD, Trav, gentlemen.
Maddie, have we lost our relevance, Maddie, if they're putting announcements on the ASX now?
I don't know. Are we obsolete?
Well, who would have thought?
Are we now redundant?
Who would have thought a takeover proposal would be material?
Mate, in what world is a bloody deca-billion-dollar merger the second most important news of the day?
According to us, apparently.
We are a bit attached to this SLR thing. Right, let's get into the revised deal. Now, look, you think it's changed, but first pass, the cash is the same, the shares are the same. There's been a little bit of clever rejigging to avoid this independent experts report that I guess St. Barbara might have been deeming as something that could slow down this whole DD process. Lads, let's get into it. Let's go through the deal. What is the new revised deal from Silver Lake that has made the ASX? Check it out on the ASX, everyone.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. So the number of shares being issued, 327.1 million, stays the same. The amount of cash, rather, stays the same. The total consideration actually goes down because those shares are valued at a slightly lower price, and that just factors in that the Silver Lake share price has come down a bit since the initial transaction. So 707 million is the headline number. And yeah, one take might be that Silver Lake are trying to just re-engage that St. Barbara board and sort of make them, you know, potentially say no. I guess in Silver Lake's case, ideally say yes to being able to do some due diligence.
So they had the previous offer headline was 732 million. Now it is 707 million. And as JD explained, that takes into account the reduction in Silver Lake's share price. And another thing that confused me first looking at it, but we figured out why, we'll get into it was the 19.99% plus, they said another 7%. 7.6%,
yeah, yeah.
But that was the portion of those remaining shares. So the actual share portion is still the same, and St. Barbara will still own, I think it's 26.2% of Silver Lake. So,
well, not really, because the shares, like a huge portion of shares are just going to be in specie distributed to St. Barbara shareholders. So it's not going to be owned by St. Barbara. They'll just belong to the shareholders, yeah.
Okay, so let's go into this 19.99% and how they've restructured this share distribution side of it, lads. Right,
hit it. Super clever, mate.
Take it away, really clever, Trav.
Yeah.
Did they listen to us about the independent expert report?
Well, I think
I've got a feeling they knew.
There are some really great calls, I think, that we've made. I think we've covered the story really well. So big pat on our own back for this one, Maddie. I think this is super clever, right? Because they've reduced the conditionality of the deal in a pretty big way, and also in a pretty public way. And the intention there is to have the board of St. Barbara review its whether or not it's going to be a superior deal or not. And they don't have to say it's a superior deal or not yet. They just have to open the door from a due diligence perspective, or that's what's sort of encouraged in order to progress things to the next stage. So I think it's super, super clever, right? And the way that they've done that is by framing the share component, the scrip component, to be this large portion of it, the 19.9% of it, or an equivalent of 19.9% of shareholding, to be in specie distributed to St. Barbara shareholders. That effectively means that St. Barbara will never have greater than 20% ownership of Silver Lake, and therefore that sort of change of control threshold piece is never triggered. So there's never the need for the independent expert report, which just prolongs things from the timing perspective.
So and Silver Lake will now not need to do St. Barbara won't do due diligence on Silver Lake at all, will they? Because they're not going over that 20%? Or will they still? I know Silver Lake's got to St. Barbara.
It's absolutely still, you know, a 2-week due diligence period that's being baked in here. And
does that go both ways?
Yeah, they'll want to conduct reverse. I mean, because there's a big scrip component, if you're St. Barbara, you really want to assess what you think the true value of Silver Lake is, because, you know, a huge part of this consideration is scrip. So yes, it will go both ways.
Okay, so how are we going to interpret this announcement? We've gone into what, I guess, the elements that have changed, but what do we interpret in terms of timeline and what the process is going forward for both parties, for all three parties?
Yeah, so how I'd interpret this, reading the announcement this morning, is that Silver Lake want to be able to get in the door and do their due diligence. So through that 2-week period that they've proposed, they can do the technical due diligence on the Gwalia mine and so on. And then they can also, in conjunction, write up that binding proposal and put that forward at the end of the 2-week period. And then the sort of customary matching rights that you'd suspect Genesis would have, they haven't released this to the public, would be that they might have 5 days or so to try and match that bid if that's what they decide to do.
And this was hinging on the fact that St. Barbara were not opening the doors prior to this. And we did discuss in last week's episode, Trav brought it up, that based on his bit of lawyer feedback, that another offer needed to be made, even though this offer isn't different in cash and shares, it needed to be made to really get St. Barbara to consider it.
And just zoom out, right? So we obviously have done the numbers on what we think the value, is better on the Silver Lake bid, which means that the board must have denied the Silver Lake bid based on the conditionality associated with it. And what have they done here? Well, they've kept the value the same effectively, but they've improved the conditionality massively. So, you know, from that respect, it absolutely warrants to be, you know, reevaluated by the board. And the board don't have to deem it a superior deal right now. There just has to be a gateway for it to become a superior deal. And that process evolves throughout, you know, this due diligence process that, you know, Silver Lake is proposing to undertake.
I think that's completely right. And we looked back and just flicked through the very first proposal that Genesis and St. Barbara put forward in December of last year. And there were just two conditions that would comprise a superior proposal from a St. Barbara point of view. And they were A, reasonably likely to be completed on a reasonable timeline, and more favourable to St. Barbara shareholders than the transaction that was previously put forward. And I think we can agree in our eyes, check and check for both of those 2 points.
So the purpose of this announcement was to alleviate the concerns of St. Barbara. Do you think this announcement has done that?
I think it doesn't. I'm not sure that's what the purpose is. To, I think, build public pressure to warrant a reevaluation, like a formal reevaluation of a deal with less conditionality by the St. Barbara board.
And talking to those 2 points, what you can sort of summarise, it's in the 3 dot points on the front page of the announcement today. It really speaks to 2 issues, and they're all sort of related, but that cash shortfall that we really flagged over the past couple episodes we've done, and the timing. Now, obviously, we've delved into the timing just before by discussing how that independent expert review is no longer needed. So I think Silver Lake have addressed the cash shortfall point quite well. So there's a syndicated bank facility. Westpac is a big part of that, and they don't really care where the credit comes from. So we've done a bit of digging, and we can see Silver Lake have a hedge book with a Big Four, with CommBank as well. And it'd be hard to imagine that there's a challenge for one of these Big Four banks for them to be uncomfortable taking Silver Lake as a counterparty. Mm-hmm. They've got known operations. They're producing. They've got cash flow. And it covers that point which Trav raised on the last episode we did on the deal. Talking about this review event, so we know that something comes up on the 30th of June, so in a month and a bit's time. And the St. Barbara board, they haven't explicitly mentioned it, but they're concerned about this. And I think Silver Lake are doing what they can to sort of alleviate those concerns.
Totally. And just to contextualise this a little bit more, we came to the conclusion that this deal has been rejected on conditionality, not value. And so let's look at the conditionality. One of them was that one of the reasons could be that it was going to take longer to complete. Why was the time to completion a big issue? Well, we sort of thought maybe there are these, cash flow dynamics evolving, and maybe there's some pressure on from the lenders to completing at a certain period of time. And Silver Lake have sort of, are trying to mitigate that that concern to the best they can by trying to mind read what St. Barbara's kind of actual issues are here with the little public information they have available. One of those pieces of information is this review date that is sort of flagged within their half year statements that on the 30th of June 2023, their lenders are going to conduct a review event. And it's pretty vague and kind of unclear what's sort of happening around then, but a waiver has been granted with this review event in mind in relation to, knowing that there's a completion of a merger happening with Genesis. So
I think our point here is that during the due diligence, Silver Lake could renegotiate these terms with the bank knowing that Silver Lake is going to be the counterparty on the other side.
Absolutely right. If you are a bank and by our digging, it looks like Westpac has this facility. What's Westpac like? Westpac is absolutely going to be able to have a conversation with both St. Barbara and Silver Lake about the potential to just renegotiate some terms for an interim period of time, because they can have some level of confidence about completion. And that confidence is even improved with the lowered degree of conditionality in this revised offer. So I just think that any sort of interim cash flow issues can totally be mitigated with thoughtful discussions with lenders. It would happen at a commercial rate, but it would still result in this deal being value accretive, in my opinion.
Yeah, so moving on from that cash shortfall and the timing issues, there's a few other call-outs we're keen to make. One of them is that there hasn't really been a proper price discovery process throughout that. And what I really mean is that there hasn't been any form of auction or market pricing. St. Barbara have really been stopping the discovery of what these assets could be priced at. And that's what that Silver Lake are trying to do, aren't they?
I think that's right. We sort of saw, version one of this deal resulting in this, complicated spin out and other assets and all that sort of stuff. And now that it's no longer that, it's just the Leonora assets, there is no price discovery because that deal was framed with the at the conclusion of the prior deal. So now all of a sudden, I think what's happening is Silver Lake are trying to turn what was an off-market deal into more like natural price discovery by bidding on it. And I think that will ultimately have to result in Genesis having to match that price.
Yeah, I mentioned before, Trav, they've come back, we discussed last week, they've come back with this second offer, you'd say. It's kind of the same deal. Now, are St. Barbara forced to reconsider this deal now?
This is another one for the legal gurus out there. And look, I think it's, from what I can understand, it's technically a new proposal, right? Even if it's not higher in value, this is the information that I do have. Does this revised proposal, even though it's the same value, warrant a reevaluation from that fiduciary element, right? And what I've been told is it's technically a new proposal. Even if it's not necessarily higher in value, but because these unvested subscription rights for the further 7.5%, they basically remove that implementation risk and timing delay from the previous condition of a fair and reasonable, as defined by the independent expert. And that basically results in the fact that St. Barbara, they won't acquire more than 20% of Silver Lake now. So if after the due diligence period, St. Barbara conclude that, their restructured proposal is superior, and that would trigger, Genesis's matching right. That said, the due diligence hurdle, which will afford the St. Barbara board a broad discretion depending on their view of Silver Lake, and the attendant time delay may prove to be a sticking point here. So, the real question is, what would you rather have, being a St. Barbara shareholder, Silver Lake stock or Genesis stock?
I think that's a great question. And while we're not giving any financial advice, you look at the two companies and you see that Silver Lake has many producing mines. They've got cash flow. But on the other hand, they're, in quotation marks, a less sexy business, aren't they?
less high public figures.
Yeah, they just go about their business. The team, Luke Tonkin and the group there, just keep chipping away. And the performance over the last 6 or 7 years, or maybe even longer, has been pretty stellar, hasn't it?
Well, they're gonna have what, 19.9% of a plus $1 billion company, whereas Genesis is currently capped at just over 600, with their Ulysses deposit and the Mount Morgans, 80% of Mount Morgans via a shareholding. So
from some of the parts assets valuation, you can absolutely backsolve Silver Lake. You can't backsolve Genesis. If you think about and Maddie raised this in our last chat, right? But if you think about the typical St. Barbara shareholder, there is a degree to which they've watched their share price dwindle, you know, potentially 80%. And they're looking at that loss and thinking, well, I'm now in a position where do I roll the dice with the magic man being Rel, or do I accept, you know, the slow, steady, predictable, unsexy return of Silver Lake? And for people who've experienced that loss, they may be more susceptible to that cognitive biases that humans are susceptible to when they make these sorts of decisions.
Okay, so the timeline, you can see the timeline in Silver Lake's announcement, the timeline of this. So you got the 2 weeks of due diligence. If, as you mentioned, Trav, if it is granted by St. Barbara. So we will be definitely back onto this. So let's say 2 weeks' time, due diligence is done and a binding offer is submitted by Silver Lake, which is this offer converted into a binding. These are hypothetical, obviously. Then Genesis then have the matching rights to match that offer. And then, well, that will be a whole nother story. What do you reckon?
Yeah, the next deal is a juicy one. I reckon let's tuck into it.
Right, yeah, the actual big, 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 big deal. So you've got Livent, pronunciation. We did hear a bit of a social media strategy. If you mispronounce things deliberately, it gets you more views because people rag on you in the comments.
So. Giving away all our tricks, mate.
YouTube, that YouTube trick. So Livent have proposing to merge with Alchem. So Livent is a New York Stock Exchange listed $4.6 billion company. So that's 6.8 billion Aussie. Alchem are the product of a merger between Orocobre and Galaxy. So they're capped at $9.6 billion. So you'll know them for the Mount Catlin lithium deposit down in Ravensthorpe. And they've just had their James Bay project approved after a five-year time frame in Quebec, their big lithium deposit, and they've also got other brine operations as well. So big deal, guys. What's the go? JD's gone deep into this, and this is going to be a sensational insight, I reckon.
Yeah, there were a few fun ones to chuck around. So Livent, however you say that one, you could sort of say they're a bit early to the game. They were formed as Lithium Corp of America in 1944, so I quite like that one from the presentation. And like you highlighted, Manny, both these companies have assets spread out. So Allkem, obviously, with Mount Catlin in Australia. But the key underpinnings of this deal are that the companies combined have assets both in Argentina and both in the same province in Canada. So the deal sees Allkem shareholders get 56% of MergeCo in an all-scrip deal at an exchange ratio that sort of implies a 14% premium to the Allkem price. So that's why we've seen Allkem's share price up. And I think it was at the last time we checked up 17%. And you could see last night Livent were up 5% in America. So obviously the deal needs shareholder approval and court approval. They've only flagged for it to wrap up at the end of this calendar year. And the outcome would be a company with a main New York Stock Exchange listing and a CDI listed down here. So really a North American business. It wouldn't really be an American business anymore. And we'll tuck into that a bit more later on. Neither company has any major individual shareholders or any obvious blocking shareholders. The biggest shareholders for both of these companies are just passive funds. So don't expect anyone holding up the deal on that front. So both these companies, as you'd expect, are parading around the value creation, and they flag annual cost synergies of $125 million per annum and CapEx expenditure savings of $200 million. So those CapEx savings, they really come from the shared infrastructure with the Canadian assets. I think they might have flagged within 10 kilometres. No, Argentinian assets within 10 kilometres of one another and Quebec assets within 100 kilometres of one another, as well as those corporate costs. There'd be a bit of a restructuring, and some people would be obviously leaving the boards and the management teams of both. So I think in this case, the synergistic benefits are they're pretty real. Both these companies, like I just stressed, have assets in the same jurisdiction. So there's lots of infrastructure that could sort of be saved in both processing and roads and so on. There was one other line that stood out to me in the announcement, that flexibility to utilize feedstock from expanded asset portfolio to supply processing facilities. Now, I think this is pretty intriguing. I read this as the company being able to sort of flex whether it's producing more carbonate or whether it's producing more hydroxide to really just take value of whatever is being priced better at that moment.
Right, Trav, what's it look like on a valuation standpoint, trading multiples?
Mate, in M&A, they're always asking, is it accretive? Is it accretive? And what does accretive mean? It just means, is the target trading at a lower multiple than the acquirer, in which case the acquirer sometimes benefits from their existing trading multiple applying to the earnings of the target. In this case, Livent trades at a high multiple. They traded about 6.4 times, FY25 EBITDA versus 3 times for Elkem. So it's, obviously pretty accretive for Livent despite the implied 14% premium. And on top of that, you might even attract a higher multiple as a merge go by virtue of the fact that you benefit from these enhanced vertical integrations, and then that might actually result in some, more durable margins and higher margins over time as well too.
So this mining M&A is absolutely just going off at the moment, isn't it? It is just relentless.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable, and I don't think the mainstream media are giving it enough time as it probably warrants. That's why we've come onto the scene. It's just,
we are the mainstream media now, JD.
Yeah, you're seeing it more in lithium now. We've seen it in nickel. We've seen it in copper. We're obviously seeing it in gold, like we spoke about earlier. It's just coming on stronger and stronger, and you see it often. Firstly, start at the big end of town, so those huge deals, the Newcrest deal and so on, and then it often trickles its way over time down to the smaller end of town.
Every mining cycle, there's some company pays top dollar for something at the absolute top of the market, and in this case, like obviously lithium looks, it's had an amazing run, right? But because this is an all script transaction, no one really reflects on this, 5 years from now, and says someone looks silly because it's all script.
All right, here's a theory. I reckon it was COVID, because COVID, the world realised that they didn't need everyone in an office. So I think a lot of companies are probably realising mass amounts of corporate costs that can be saved by uniting. So there's Maddie's theory for the day.
Well, it's not all mining M&A is not, you should be dubious of the synergies, like especially when you've got these sort of downstream elements to it. I mean, imagine if you combine downstream with upstream and capture enhanced margin along the way. They're real synergies other than just cutting corporate costs.
Yeah, that's that vertically integrated component that this company is pretty big on. Now, there are a few other notes that I jotted down that I thought were pretty interesting to talk about. I think Trav highlighted one earlier quite well, is that pricing power. So lithium is obviously contracted, so it doesn't trade like you might see the copper price or the gold price trade. And I think they flagged that from earlier numbers, they had combined about 7% of the world's lithium production, and that's going to grow over time and get bigger with the combined entities. And I think that'll give them pricing power down the track. So I think that's a really interesting angle.
If you produce lithium products at the moment, one of your fears is going to be that your current margins are not going to stay as high as they are right now forever. And so what's one way you can protect those margins? It's actually to reduce the competitive dynamics in that market by consolidating with other peers. And they emerge as the third largest. And by doing that, they obviously have a pretty substantial competitive position. And there's not like a huge field of players that are producing these products. So but they're reducing the competitive dynamics in the market and hopefully have more pricing power when it comes to those contracts.
Yeah, and I think that flows on nicely to the next point. Are these companies sort of preempting perhaps tougher times? So you just have to look at the lithium price chart over the past couple of years, and you just see that ginormous spike up that we saw coming out of the COVID times. Free markets don't usually allow that sort of profit margin to last too long. And I think it's especially true in a commodity business, but you still do have that delay with mines taking a while to get up and running.
Right, so what happens to Mount Catlin? Mount Catlin, we'll go into how they've struggled with recovery over the previous couple of years, but what do you reckon happens with the Mount Catlin deposit?
Yeah, there's a big reason why we circled this earlier. And if I was a investment banker, I'd be sort of circling around this one. I think it's really interesting, and it does seem like a bit of an afterthought when you look at the vertically integrated assets that they highlight in Argentina and in Canada. This one just doesn't fit in that match, and we'll flick up a chart that highlights that quite well. So like you sort of said, Maddie, that it hasn't been performing too well lately. They produced 39,000 tonnes of spodumene concentrate, and that was at 5.2%. So I think you did a bit of digging on the recoveries they've been getting there.
Well, it was very well publicised. They were mining, going through a lot of areas of the fine-grained spodumene. So when they talk about coarse-grained and fine-grained. So coarse-grained is the good grain, that it floats very easily, whereas if it's fine-grained spodumene, so when they process it, they have trouble actually floating it. So look, if you look at this chart, this is just Mount Catlin compared to Pilbara Minerals, Pilgangoora. You look at their recently, so last year, September 22, God, their recovery was 26%. And it started climbing back up. They had a better quarter last one. I think they were about 60. So you look at Pilbara Minerals, they sit around that. They only report their recovery annually. There was a mention last quarter was 60-odd%, whereas they were sitting around 75%. So it shows how much the Mount Catlin mine's losing out the back end of the plant due to the recovery. So yeah. I'm not sure if that's what the prediction going forward is there, but that was you can see what they've lost over the last years back to the March 21 quarter.
Yeah, and the resource estimate that they did in late 21 had 13.3 million tonnes at 1.2%. So given that was a couple of years ago, and that the NI 43-101 that they did highlighted just 3.8 years of mine life, that you think right now there's only about 2 years left of mine life this. So it sort of brings about the question, if they are looking to potentially get rid of this once the merger's done, who sort of picks up the asset? And just jotting down a few names of companies in the area, you've got Global Lithium. They might have their hands full trying to develop the Manna asset.
They might not have the funding capability either.
Exactly. IGO. And MinRes is another name. So MinRes has been active in the area. We saw them get involved in that Essential deal just a couple of weeks back. So what do you guys reckon?
Well, what are they going to buy? Like 2 years mine life and potential for exploration if they see more. But that wouldn't they? They'd take on a lot of rehabilitation and everything to buy the asset with a short mine life, wouldn't you think?
Mm, yeah, it probably doesn't fit the portfolio of a MinRes or an IGO unless there are synergies with their other stuff, but it looks a bit too far away for any of that.
And what about the sort of state of the mill there?
Mate, I hear it's well, I don't know too much, but I mean it is.
Did you hear this at a pub, Trav? We've talked about this.
yes, I did hear it at a pub. I heard at a pub that mill could be potentially used at the nearby gold project that's undeveloped, but that desperately needs mill and finds funding pretty tough going at the moment.
Oh, and the pits, and we're talking about Medallion. And the pits as well, all the infrastructure for like water and tailing storage and stuff like that. So look, I know Medallion have had a bit of a revision on their company journey of where they're heading with their pump it into the expiration now. But I think Mount Catlin shutting down and utilising their infrastructure is a big key to the success and development of Medallion.
The longer lithium prices stay this high, the further out in the future that becomes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was just going to say, with lithium prices this high, it doesn't matter how sort of high cost the operation is, and it's not even that high cost.
It's just low recovery, right? Yeah.
Even at 26% recovery, they probably still made money.
Mm-hmm. Nobody be shutting that down in this sort of market. So no. The last thing of note, guys, the company, they didn't highlight a HQ. I'd imagine that'd be somewhere in North America, and they didn't announce a name either. Any suggestions?
I think the name, you've got to merge the two words together. Alive.
Alive.
Alive. Alive. And Alive fits the lithium thing.
Live Chem.
Live Chem.
Live Chem. Alive. I like Alive. What about Lick'em? L-I-K-E-M. Lick'em. Hey, boys, do you want to, speaking of these M&A, do you want to play a little game? Carl and JD, I won't take up too much of your time.
Yeah, it depends how long it takes.
Right, it's nearly Friday too. Right, predict a takeover.
All right, I've got one for you. A bit out there, but could happen. Sandfire to take over Comacow in Botswana.
Oh, interesting.
And what have you got, mate?
Oh, I reckon could be a mixture. Gold Road, Goldfields to Grey.
Mm, he's on the gold train.
Right, news from around the grounds. Do you want to read them, JD? I'll let you take the throne today.
Chalice in a trading halt. So interestingly, they said in their quarter that Chalice ended the quarter in a strong financial position with $85 million in cash. That was a 31st of March and remains fully funded till mid-2024. So we'll see what sort of raising they come out with. I guess the upside is that even if they do raise $100 million, it's a bit of a drop in the water for a big company like them.
Totally. It feels opportunistic, right? Share price went up, raise now just in case, you know, the world looks different in a few months' time, but you've got the cash there at a less dilutive price and you're a bit bulletproof for a longer period of time.
Yeah, on a macro level, it might look like they've got good foresight there. And WA1, they did an institutional placement raising $10 million. It all went to Regal. So they had some interesting drill hits 500 kilometres south of Halls Creek and assays are pending.
Shout out to Henry Renshaw. Love you, Henry. Right, boys.
Hooteroo.
Friday tomorrow, pub lunch.
Oh, yeah. We've got one scheduled. We got a beer scheduled.
Oh, we do. We're going to see a fundy at Subi Hotel.
Beautiful.
JD, if you can't keep your headphones on for the duration of this, you are not invited, sunshine.
Hooteroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.